He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
The thing with motion graphic is sometimes it can be kind of like an echo chamber, like everybody's work can start to look the same. I find that if I look for inspiration sort of outside of just motion graphic and on the field that's sort of either adjacent to it, for me, it would be the stop motion puppets. I love them for like character design and texturing, or sculpture. Like those are two of my favorite place to kind of look for. And then I'm also looking at other software too, like not just in cinema or After Effects, because I kind of more result oriented and less of like what tools I'm using. If I see that a software can do something that's really interesting, like things I've never done before, I would probably want to investigate that.
What happens when you hit the cap at your job or in your career? How do you move past it, face the fear of the unknown, and ultimately take control of your career? Naki Din is a very talented freelance 2D, 3D motion graphics designer and animator who had to face those tough questions and come out the other end a transformed artist. In this podcast, Ryan Summers chats with Naki about how she moved from Vietnam to the US to get her start in motion design. They'll also talk about how she invested in herself to be able to stand out from the crowd and the importance of pinpointing what exactly is limiting you and pushing past it. But before we begin, let's go ahead and hear from one of our amazing School of Motion alumni.
Hey, my name is Andre. I'm a motion designer from New York City. So I have taken 5 or 6 different classes from School of Motion, and every single one has been just awesome. I love the content structure, the fact that you have kind of like a teaching assistant, an actual industry professional that's there to kind of walk you through and give you some critiques during this process is really great. School of Motion has been one of my key places to learn these design and animation skills that have enabled me to become a full-time motion designer. So it's an invaluable resource, and I would recommend it wholeheartedly to anyone that's interested in learning animation and design.
Motioneers, sometimes you run to someone that really inspires you, and for some reason or another, you don't run into them again for a while. And then all of a sudden, they pop up on your radar, whether it's through seeing something on Instagram, or you run across them in Slack, or maybe someday in the future you see them in the real world, and they look and feel like a completely different artist. And all you want to do is sit down with them, ask them, how did you do this? How did you go from being this one type of artist to being this totally other type of artist, but still just as amazing, if not more? And that just happened with me recently. I want to introduce to you, if you haven't met her yet, an artist who I met a while ago, and only in the last few weeks, I ran into her work again, and I didn't even think it was the same person. It was amazing. So today we have Naki Din on the show today. Naki, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I can't remember where it was that I saw your work recently. We might have been on a Discord server or in Slack somewhere, but I saw you pop up and I happened to look at some of your new work, and I couldn't believe that there's this artist doing this amazing 3D work that a couple of years ago I ran into your work and you didn't have any or barely any 3D. I'm really interested to just talk about how you came to this position in your career, but also just figure out how you started. How did you get into motion design? So I guess maybe that's the best place to start. Naki, how did you get into motion design in the first place?
So I actually went to school for filmmaking in Seattle, and I had taken maybe 1 or 2 After Effects classes at the time. But during my year and being like a film school, they were kind of focusing more on things like invisible effects for movies. So for example, like VFX stuff, like if you shoot against a window and the outside's like blown out, and then so they teach you to like shoot another plate with proper exposure for the outside, and then how to comp that in After Effects later. So I didn't actually do a lot of animating in After Effects, but when I graduated, I only had like 2 months to find a full-time jobs because I'm an international student and I need a work visa. And I need to find somebody who would like also sponsor my work visa, which can be pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And a lot of my classmates at the time were kind of promoting themselves as, you know, cinematographer, videographer, producer. And some would also market themselves as editor, but I don't really see anybody who put motion graphics on their resume. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think the only way I can't get hired and stand out, because all of my classmates are pretty talented themselves too, is to put motion graphics on mm-hmm. my resume. So I market myself like a editor with like emphasis in motion graphics, because I think that would give me a lot more chance to be hired. And I wasn't that great actually at the time. I know very basic After Effects. I don't even know what Easy Ease is. But luckily, Justin Fay, who was my first boss, he was exactly looking for somebody to do exactly that, like helping him with editing. But also, he was trying to build like a motion graphic person in-house for him, because he always outsourcing these for other freelancers. And he wanted to have somebody who can, you know, be there all the time for him. And he reached out to the school, and the school emailed me, and I emailed him back, and then I worked for him for like 6 years.
Oh my gosh, for 6 years. That had to be an amazing relationship to build up. like, how did that affect who you've become today? I feel like that's so rare to hear now, that people are actually staying at the same place for that long. What was that experience like?
Yeah, well, part of it also because of the work visa that I stayed as well. But I think I was very lucky to find him, or mm-hmm. he found me in a way, because not only that he sponsored me, but he knew that my After Effects skill at the time was quite basic, but he was mm-hmm. like willing to kind of invest in that in a way. Mm-hmm. Like when it's slow doing work, like he didn't make me do like busy work or anything. He was okay with me just like watching tutorials and follow tutorial during like work hour mm-hmm. and such. So I would say that I learned all of the After Effects stuff on the job.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then so funny, because then School of Motion start to happen mm-hmm. then, and there was a After Effects class that came out, and I convinced him to like buy that class for me, and he did. And and I learned a lot from that.
That's awesome. Do you remember when we actually first started talking to each other? I know it was when I was at Digital Kitchen very early on. I was trying to help our Seattle office expand. And I think I ran into you on Twitter or somewhere and checked out your work. And I loved like the mix of work that you had and the range of styles you had. And immediately I was like, wow, this is somebody our studio could really benefit from. But I don't remember when that was.
I don't either. But yes, I just started to get on Twitter, and I only follow like motion graphics people on Twitter. And then I saw your tweets, and I was like putting my name in there, see if that works. So yeah.
Very cool. If it's okay, could I rewind a little bit? Because you said something there that I think there's probably a lot of people in the audience right now listening that are probably in a similar situation, but can you talk a little bit about how you said you're an international student, and obviously there's so many challenges with that in terms of getting to the school that you want to go to and the pressure of trying to find the job as soon as possible and having to have someone sponsored. How did you make the journey? Like where were you living? Where did you come from to be able to make it to Seattle? And what was that like? Like how did you convince yourself to get to the States? And what, can you talk a little bit about what that felt like, what the pressure felt like? Because I think there's a lot of people listening that have a similar kind of background right now.
Yeah, so I'm from Vietnam, and mm-hmm. I think my parents just really wants to send us here because my sister and I, because they think that we'll get better educations here. Mm-hmm. And I originally have always wanted to be in the film industry, and what's best to go to the US for, although I didn't get to any school in LA. So that's why I took the school in Seattle. Yeah. And so it was mostly their decisions and less of what I was thinking. I was so young. I didn't even know what's up. Yeah. To like make like a intentional decision to move.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah.
It's so interesting, because I think there's a lot of people that run into that where it's the beginning of the path is laid out for them, and then there's so many different ways you can go. And like you said, you were so smart to kind of recognize that you needed to kind of almost market yourself in a way that was different from everyone else around you. I think that was a really incredible instinct, because I think a lot of people do the opposite. They see what everyone else is doing and they copy that. I mean, we talked to so many people who are putting together demo reels and websites, and they just look for reference. They're just like, show me a demo reel of someone who got hired. But the idea that you actually went the opposite direction to kind of identify what makes you different or makes you unique, I think that's why, even when I ran into you, when I did, that's why your work resonated with me so much. So you're working for someone for 6 years. What happens after that? Did you start thinking about going freelance? Did you think that you needed to go to a different place to learn something more? What spurred on the next step in your career?
So I was working there for 6 years, and I goes from, you know, motion graphics and then starting the 3D path. And then I just start feeling like I'm the only one in the company who knows motion graphics.
Right.
And we kind of work for other company too, like through my original company, but even then the other company, it's still, I'm like the only motion graphic person. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I hit a cap somehow with the company. We were getting like the same type of work, and I was kind of bored with the type of work that we were doing, and it's so hard to kind of convince your company to get different kind of work. So I decided to freelance, and I told my husband, I said, maybe I'll try this for a year or two. And if it doesn't work out, I'll try and find a full-time job. But so far it's been great. So I'm still freelancing.
That's amazing. So how scary was that to go from something where at least it's consistent and there's a certain amount of security working at a place. But I think you echo the sentiments of a lot of people we hear that come to School of Motion, that they can't figure out exactly why they're hitting that cap. I think that's such a great word, a cap or a ceiling. And they don't even know exactly how to move past it. But you identified pretty early on, like you felt like you just need to be around people doing the work you wanted to do. How was that? Was that scary, or was that exciting? Was that intimidating, or was it kind of like inspiring to figure out like, okay, I need to make a big push? What was your mindset at that point?
Yeah, it was definitely very, very scary. We also decided to move to New York. It's kind of like a bucket list thing before we settle down. So so that kind of like gave me a big push. And then I also know that there's quite a lot of work in New York at the time. So I was like, I could get work one way or another there. It's just a matter of finding, can I get the work that I wanted to work on? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I spent a few months working on my demo reel, and I got a really good response online from the demo reel. So that really gave me a boost and thinking that, okay, this is probably the right way to go.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you make that decision. What was the first place you landed at once you decided that you're going to kind of move on? Where did you go to?
It's mostly still at the first few months, because I actually was still working on my demo reel after I already quit my job. Mm-hmm. So the first few months was still with like people I've known from when I was full time. And mm-hmm. like they heard that I went freelance, so they snatched me up. So I was working with a lot with that. And then just some shops here and there around, kind of like all over the place, really. And that's when I'm realizing like, oh, I don't really need to be in New York in a way. I mean, mm-hmm. I love being New York, but yeah, I was like, I mean, COVID started too. So
right.
It's so funny because I thought moving to New York because I felt like I have to be in the office. Mm-hmm. And my goal has always been being able to work from anywhere and not having to tie down to a physical locations. Mm-hmm. And then COVID started, and every company start, you know, doing remote work, and or company that who used to don't like the idea of remote working, they want people to go in house and work at their mm-hmm. office, are now open to remote work. And so I moved back to Seattle because I love Seattle.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, it's so amazing the time I think we're at right now in motion design, because there were so many things people wanted to be able to do. Work from home, work as a designer, book their own time, work on only the things they wanted to work with teams that would make them better. And I think so many people were held back just because of the geographic requirements. And we've all heard it, like you have to move to LA or New York to get work, which you did. I did the same thing. I moved to LA to try to like level up and be around the people doing the work. And I feel like all of that has changed. And I don't know if it's ever going to go back to the old ways, to be totally honest. But that, I think that takes me to just in terms of your work, you're to me, I always, you know, I look to your website, anybody listen to this, you're probably going to want to go to nakidin.com because I want to talk about so much of your work, but I'm even just looking at like your illustration page. And I feel like when I ran into you, a lot of your work had this vibe to it, but then I go to your work page now and especially your demo reel. And there is so much really incredible 3D across a really wide range of applications of 3D. I want to get to that question now that like, how did you go from the artist that I knew a handful of years ago to now, I mean, you have full on, I have to say, the opening shot for your demo reel, the opening sequence with the character landing and all of the kind of cloth simulation and the really beautiful type animation, just pronouncing who your name is, I think it's one of the best demo reel openings I've seen in the last 4 or 5 years. And I watch a lot of demo reels between the class that I've made and doing open office hours and helping hire for all kinds of places. Openings for demo reels never stand out. They're almost always one of the least interesting parts of a demo reel. Yours is like a declaration. It's like an explosion. Like immediately I get a sense of who you are, like if you're going to be fun to work with. I get a sense of what you can do, what you're excited about doing, the type of work you hope I can help you do. Talk to me a little bit, because I think that, again, there's so many people who are at the stage where maybe they're decent at design. They've used After Effects for years, but 3D is scary. They know they want to do it, but they have no idea how to start. I literally feel like I just didn't see your work for a couple of years and then came back and you're like this fully transformed artist. What spurred you to do that? And how did you get this good, seemingly to me from the outside, so fast?
Yeah. Well, personally, I don't think it was that fast. I think it was because I was doing a lot kind of behind the scene work that I don't post, or I posted and then I deleted it. So
no, do you really post and get rid of it? Oh no.
Yeah. Because especially when I start freelancing, I kind of want to clean up my Instagram feed and such. So right. So I would delete work that I don't think up to my standard anymore, or yeah, it wasn't that good. And I think it's also because I just recently start freelancing. I start freelancing maybe 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really start putting a lot of work online, really putting myself out there and doing a lot of personal projects and put my work out there. So it feels like all suddenly I was doing a lot. But and especially when I freelance, I had a lot of time to really focusing on my own projects. So
right.
That's why it seems like all of a sudden I was doing a lot. The intro one was quite funny because when I was working on my demo reel, I realizing that year, a lot of my work project from when I was full-time was just either just okay, or it was the work that I no longer wants to be associating with or want to work on it anymore. So I end up having maybe like 15 or 30 seconds of worth of stuff to show.
Right.
And so I decided to just spend a few months and just working on a lot of personal project and to like a little bit, like 5 second stuff to kind of fill up my demo reel and also showing like what kind of work I like to get, which is more kind of stylized 3D.
Right.
And so the intro was something to like, I can't just do a simple intro. I need to do something almost like a personal project, like a moving one, so that not only that it also showcasing my skill, but also kind of fill up the spot that I need. And so that kind of came about. So I'm glad to hear it was very well received.
I don't say this very often. I think I've only said this maybe about, off the top of my head, I can think of Sakani Solomon in terms of his opening to his demo reel. That's probably like 12, 13 seconds. And there's very few other ones I can think of where, to be honest, if I was looking for someone and I played the first 8 seconds, you know, just the opening, your character coming down, says your name, says demo reel, shows your logo off, I would probably, this isn't being hyperbolic, I would probably stop and reach out to you after the first 8 seconds. and I wouldn't need to watch the rest of the reel. If I'm looking for somebody who does character work, who has a really good sense for design, knows how to move a camera, knows how to composite, can animate not just a character moving, but also creating some type of emotion in the movement, all my questions have already been answered in the first 8 seconds, right? That's really, really rare, but that's exactly what you want from a demo reel. I mean, I still am going to watch it, but immediately I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I found the person I need to hire. Let me go and write out the email and at least like get the conversation started with them. And then I'm going to come back and watch the rest of the demo reel. That says so much to you for how much time you've put into, how much time you've invested in yourself, which I think is honestly something people want to do, but it's really rare in the end that you said you spent months working on 5-second projects. And it sounds like you're also really, really hard on yourself, or you're at least very, you have the capability to put a critical eye to your work and you don't mind killing your darlings at all. Because it sounds like you had a lot of work and you got it down to 15 seconds, but this reel is almost 47 seconds long. I don't think I've seen a reel that has, from what I can tell, it feels like 70% personal projects and maybe 30% like client work that feels this solid. Like this feels like someone who, to me, when I look at it, who has the capability to eventually become like a creative director with their own vision, but also knows how to execute everything. I guess I'm just saying I really, really like your demo reel.
Thank you. Yeah. When I was that's probably the second demo reel I've made. But the first demo reel I made was when I graduated from school. And it's so funny because we had sort of a showing but it's in Seattle. And then they're inviting people in the industry to come and walk around and see everybody's work. Mm-hmm. And I worked really hard on the demo reel with the music and the sound design. And then on that day, it turns out that you can only show the visual. Oh. And there was no music to it.
Yeah.
And I remember watching my demo reel just by visual only. And I remember like, oh my God, this is so slow. Or this is mm-hmm. like the pacing was not right because it was matched to the music. But
yep.
without it, it didn't catch anybody's eyes, yep. I would say. So that was something I remember a lot when I create my second demo reel is that if somebody watched it on mute, it still should look or inviting.
I feel like I don't want this to be an advertisement for our demo reel dash class, but I feel like you're saying everything I try to give advice over 4 weeks in like a 30-minute interview, because I'm literally sitting here while we're talking just watching your demo reel on loop, obviously the sound's down, and that's one of the things that struck me is that the pacing is so nice. Like I never sit on anything for that long. There's lots of nice little like camera pushes, the cuts match really well. It's never boring. You never stand one thing for that long. You bounce back and forth between different types of shots. Like I see a couple of 3D shots, then there's some kind of VFX. There's these nice like split screens where you're showing like a push in on something. And there's something you did that I'm not even normally a big fan of where you show like kind of process, but you have that really cool shot with the kind of like the figure drawing kind of mannequin doll, and you show your just quick process to show what you did, but it's edited so well, the pacing so well. And I've never watched it with the music on, and I'm still like, it's rare that I will watch a demo reel more than once, but I'm literally just watching it 3 or 4 times and kind of just in awe of not even just like the content, the work itself, but how you put it all together. The other big thing about it is there's such a wide range. Like I love that. There's a Santa Claus shot. That's 2D animation that you just feel the weight of him like dragging his feet through the snow. But it has everything, right? Like this feels like, you know, I could trust you with animated type. I could trust you with art direction. I know that you understand 2D and 3D. Like it's really good demo reel. I think it's definitely, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched it, you definitely pause the podcast and watch it a couple times, because it's there's a lot of good lessons in here. So what did this demo reel do for you when you put this out? How did you use this? It sounds like you're really aware of like your network and how to communicate to studios you want to work with. Did you use this as a calling card to introduce yourself to new shops or to new connections? What'd you do with this once you finished it?
Yeah, I got a lot of emails immediately after I posted online. Unfortunately, I can only take one, so I end up having to turn down quite a lot of work then. And that demo reel and like the response that I get from everybody like on Instagram and such was like really nice, which kind of gave me like a confident boost and like mm-hmm. let me know that, okay, I can be freelancing for a while. And so far, every time I send my demo reel, I've been getting like response back. So that's pretty good. I think unless they were looking for somebody who was doing like photo reel stuff, then maybe they would say my work don't show that much. But so far, I feel like I get a respond back when I email people. So it's really nice. It makes freelancing less stressful for sure. Yeah.
What I love about it is, you know, I think a lot of times people, when you put it together, a demo reel, you're kind of, there's almost, I'm trying to find the right way to say this without being judgmental, that there's almost a sense of desperation when you look at someone's demo reel because they're like, look, I can do everything. Here's everything. Here's a little bit of everything. And then you talk to someone 6 months later, a year later, and they're like, yeah, I'm still kind of just getting whatever work comes to me. I'm not getting the work I want to do. And that's when I always tell people, like, you have to go back at your demo reel and look at what the demo reel is saying. What I love about this is, like, I know immediately when I watch this, the kind of work you want to do, right? I'm sure you could do pretty much anything I could throw at you, right? But I get a sense of, like, you know what? You probably don't want to do the photoreal product shots. You want the shots or the pieces that have some type of stylization or character or a mix of 2D and 3D where you can really flex your muscles. I think that's really rare. I guess the big thing I'm thinking about this when I see it is, Rarely do I get a sense of the confidence kind of exuding from an artist when you watch a demo reel. And this is definitely one of them that I get the sense of somebody who knows what they want and they know what they can do. And they're not desperate to just be hired for anything for a day rate. They're saying that this is something I can do. You want me versus I want the work you can give me. That's like the highest compliment I think I can give a demo reel.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I was a generalist for 6 years and I was doing whatever that was coming into the company. So at this point, I was like, I wanted to do the more stylized stuff. So it's sort of an experiment in a way too, because I wanted to see how this demo reel worked for me and getting the work that I want. And if it wasn't, I was ready to make a very, very general demo reel, you know? So right. I wasn't like, yeah, and it just worked out. So that's good.
I love that. I wish more people would do that. I wish more people would. I like how you call it an experiment because I think other people would call it a risk. They'd be like, oh man, I don't know if I could, I don't want to not get booked for a couple of months because my demo reel is so specific. I think that's why people they say generalist, but the reel really is general. It's kind of like a little taste of everything. But I think the fact that you've done so much self-motivated work with your personal projects that for me, I get excited when I see artists that do that because I'm like, oh my gosh, I want that person to be in my team of staff whenever a new project comes in because that means you have a voice, you have an idea. There's something in your head that you want to try to express that I want to use that to try to pitch on jobs because I know when I'm pitching, I'm not going to get the same general kind of like idea, the initial idea you always get when someone pitches. I think that makes me want to ask, like, how do you decide which personal projects to take on? Because I think that's something people struggle with as well. You know, like I look down the list and you have this awesome mix of like, you have a Hawkeye title sequence, which I want to talk to you about. But also then right next to that, you have this really awesome piece for Frida that, you know, like it looks at least in terms of like the quality of the animation, the rendering, the style, the design, it looks like a commercial project, but you know, I'm assuming this is a personal project. How do you decide what to spend your time, and like the word you said was invest, how do you decide what to invest in for yourself?
So some of the project kind of started out as sort of just an exercise in, so Frida, for example, was just an exercise for me to learn UV mapping. And we can talk more later, but basically for that one, I was thinking like, okay, I'm not really good at modeling. So what can I do to stand out as somebody who's still new at 3D? And I know that I can paint, I can draw. So I decided to learn UV mapping so that I can do a specific or customized texture. And originally was just, you know, the doll itself. And then I have this weird things where I'm like, okay, if I'm going to spend time on this project, why don't I make it better? And I keep thinking, oh, wouldn't it be better if I add this and add that? And so it becomes like the whole thing, like a whole sequence of the Frida sequence. But in terms of like how to choose, sometimes it's just sort of based on what I wanted to learn at the time. And also I have a lot of unfinished personal projects still sitting in my computer. And the funny thing is, talking back about like the demo, I think it's like a pivotal moment for me too, because I was brainstorming what I want to show that I can do in the demo reels. I was like, oh, I can do this, that, and something else. But then when I was editing my demo reel, I didn't see any of that with the work that I already did, or with like my work at work. And I was like, why? I know I can do, you know, UV mapping. I know I can do these fun things. Like, why don't I see that in my demo reel? And realizing that it was because they're all unfinished. And like, I know in the back of my head that I can do these things because I was doing it, but I just stopped and never finished them. And that kind of gave me a sort of like a big like eureka moment where I think, okay, I really, the only way to show that I can do these skills and that I can light things, doing camera stuff. So that's when I'm focusing on, okay, I just have to really finishing all this personal project that I never did. And I do weed out like things I no longer interested in or just doesn't give me joy anymore. And just kind of focusing on the ones that I really had a passion for.
Yeah. I mean, I think it shows. I mean, it's so funny. I was flipping through your Twitter feed before we got on this call. And besides the fact that I feel like half the things that you've retweeted are also things that I've retweeted. Like, I think we share a similar affinity for just like beautifully drawn and designed things and very cartoony animation. Like I see a lot of stuff about Arcane and Studio Ghibli and people testing out tools in Blender. I guess between, if I was looking at someone to hire, one of the things I do is I watch their demo reel, right? And we've talked a lot about how much I love your demo reel. But then the next thing I'd like to do is just to like look at what you spend your time liking, right? I look at people's Instagram, and I don't even look at much as what they post, but I look at what they like, or they retweet, or who they talk to. And I feel like that's another thing that's great for listeners to hear, is that through everything you do, it definitely feels like there's this sense of like motivated curiosity. Like, you have goals, you have a vision, but you're also looking to see what other people are doing and what you can take from that and what you can share. How important is that to you in terms of just like staying hungry as an artist and staying kind of curious? Like, are you actively trying to maintain that? Because you've been working for a while now, right? You're at the point where I think a lot of artists, they hit another wall where they either get bored or they get jaded, or I don't know. I see a lot of people who are just like, oh, nothing really impresses me anymore. The industry's kind of boring. Do you try to like keep yourself curious and keep yourself excited?
Yeah, all the time. The thing with motion graphic is sometimes it can be kind of like an echo chamber. Like, everybody's work can start to look the same. So then you get bored just scrolling Instagram. But I find that if I look for inspiration sort of outside of just motion graphic and on the field that's sort of either adjacent to it, for me it would be the stop motion puppets. I love them for like character design and texturing, or sculpture. Like, those are two of my favorite place to kind of look for. And then I'm also looking at other software too, like not just in cinema or After Effects, because I kind of more result oriented and less of like what tools I'm using. So if I see that a software can do something that's really interesting, like things I've never done before, I would probably want to investigate that. For example, right now it would be Blender for me. So
I know I keep on seeing all these different posts that you have for things you can do with geometry nodes and kind of like stylized or non-photoreal things. And that immediately gets me so excited that like there's just tools out there that are more artist driven. And I'm so in love with some of the things you said. I've always struggled with how to say this, but I think you nailed the whole idea of a lot of people in motion design are very process obsessed. Like, tools and techniques and plugins, but they aren't necessarily, I guess, like results oriented, like you said, you know, where it's like, oh, you have a vision in your head of what you want to get to. You know, like I've seen you retweet things from like Corey Loftus, the creative director or the character designer on stuff like Zootopia. And I can see you trying to get to that. And it doesn't matter what the tool is. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, you drawing something or modeling something or software. It feels like you're aiming towards something. You want to get something out of your head versus just learning how a tool makes you faster or gives you new techniques. Yeah. I guess, I mean, we could talk forever about like things that we're super excited about, like where the industry goes, but maybe this is a good time to ask that question. What's for your career, right? Like you're obviously an amazing illustrator. You've really got 3D under your belt, just through what we said, like this motivated personal project kind of like experimentation. You're working freelance. You've done some amazing jobs. We haven't talked about it yet, but that Hawkeye title sequence, I think, is just a great mix of all the things you can do. What's where do you see your career going forward as an illustrator who can also do 3D? What do you want to do in the next like 3 or 4 years?
So recently, because you brought the Hawkeye thing up, but I recently get a lot more kind of film work, doing title sequence and pitch and title cards and such, and which really makes me happy a lot because it brings back to like why I went to film school in the first place. So I definitely want to stay longer in this field. But the Hawkeye was when it was really testing me, not just animation skills, but also designing skills, because we all have to pitch in and design all these frames, which makes me was like, oh, I really want to leveling up my designing skill. Because I think that's super important and hard. So I think that's going to be my goal, is to do more film work and be kind of more in the designing space and positions, I'd say. Yeah.
I mean, I just to say some great things about your work on Hawkeye, that piece was great because I thought it was such a beautiful mix of an homage to the subject matter, you know, the comic book stylings of the artist David Aja, or Aja, I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce his name, but it felt so close to what I loved about a lot of the source material, but it also combined 2D with 3D. And then when I went to your site and saw that you worked on it, I was like, oh, I wonder what you did. I thought it was so interesting, like you said, that you were responsible for designing, but then also animating, which is so rare. And it seems like everybody on the team that designed, also Greg Herman, Steve Savali, Zach, all those people also animated along with you. Mm-hmm. And then I got to see the frames that you designed and animated. And like, it's almost the bucket list of my favorite shots. Like, I don't remember what the dog's name is, but the dog holding the arrow was one of the shots that made me laugh just watching the title sequence. But the rest of them are like some of the boldest shots in terms of design. Like, there's a shot of Hawkeye about to shoot an arrow. Man, that canted like Dutch angle of all the arrows hitting the black background. I love that shot, and the sequence was so beautiful.
Thank you.
And then one of my favorite characters in the show was the character Swordsman. And you just have this like super dynamic shot that's, again, kind of like on an angle. What was that like? Did you know when you had to start designing those that if those shots got picked that you would then animate them? Were you designing knowing they had to be animated, or did you find out after that?
So because the timeline was so quick, then we, in order to finish it on time, we all have to kind of, we are assigned the shots. And some of the shot, Steve Savelle, who was leading the second main on title sequence, he sort of already has a vision, and it's just up to me to kind of clean it up and then also add whatever and then animate them. So some of them, like the dog Lucky, was his idea. And then the arrow shooting down, he has a different sort of angle on it, like a different shot, but the same idea is just showing a lot of arrows just raining down on the ground. It's so funny because when I was working on that shot and I was trying to explaining what I was going to do, Steve almost stopped me from creating that shot because it wasn't what he was thinking. But then he stopped himself and he said it to me. He's like, you know what? Why don't you just do what you're thinking? I think I'll trust you. And then I showed it to him and he loved it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, he said he was glad that he didn't stop me from making that shot.
Steve is one of the greatest human beings in all of motion design. I love the fact that he trusted you to just go and see what it looked like and then finds out. That's one of the hardest things to do, is to just have the humility to be like, maybe I don't know what the best thing is. But when you have a team of people full of artists like you, Naki, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say thanks so much. I think this is a great conversation for people to hear, because what I love about you, besides obviously like your taste and the things you are capable of and all the personal projects, is just, I've always been impressed with just the confidence from the way you speak to the way you show off your behind the scenes and you share things. But just also hearing from all this that you knew there was something, I wouldn't say wrong, but something that you wanted, and you just really invested and doubled down on yourself, and you invested in your curiosity. You didn't just do whatever everybody else was doing. You really pushed on the things you were interested in and obsessed with, and it's paid off in spades, it sounds like. And your career that you want to continue is aligned just with those things too, right? You're not wondering how to get to where you want to go. You kind of went out and did it. So I think for that, for anyone listening to this, Naki is a great example of how to take control of your career and figure out where you want to go, but also just she's full of practical examples of how you can do it, right? Investing in personal projects that are aligned to what you want to be and what you want to do and who you want to work with. So I guess besides that, I always ask people this, Naki, people I'm very interested in, is there anything like tools or techniques or artistry or projects that you're super excited about now that you want to integrate into your toolkit? I know you talked a little bit about Blender, but is there something specifically you're playing with right now or excited to get some free time to touch and experiment with?
Yeah, so definitely Blender. The grease pencil has been really interesting to me. And I was doing a pitch on this project and they wanted some sort of kind of blueprint, but in 3D space. And instead, so I thought of grease pencil and I should actually spend like a day trying to learn how to navigating around Blender and and incorporating that. And I got through the pitch and I love it so much that I decided to kind of explore more and I really enjoy it. So I'm hoping to kind of incorporating that into my works in the future.
I'm so excited you said that because I'm in the same boat. I'm looking for like the right opportunity, the right project or the right kind of like personal idea to finally try to figure out that interface. Because it's so funny how if you've used 3D in the past, Blender feels like learning a foreign, like a completely separate language. If you've never used 3D, I feel like people gravitate to it so quickly. So it has me excited about just finding some time to like rewire my brain to learn it. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate just the time and I appreciate going through some of the projects and telling people your journey. In the meantime, definitely check out Naki's website. We'll have it listed on the blog at School of Motion. But until the next time we get to talk about your next project, Naki, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It is incredible to see the growth that Naki Din has experienced over the past few years. And like Ryan mentioned, I really highly recommend you check out her website because not only does she show off all of her amazing work, but she's got a lot of great breakdowns and behind the scenes of her projects so you can get to see a little bit of her creative process. And I'm really interested to see her progress in Blender. That grease pencil's hard to ignore. It's a pretty exciting time to be a creative with so many new ways to create and so many pieces of software that will help you realize your vision. Until next time, keep on creating.